Friday, November 19th, over there in the States. Saturday the 20th, midday, here in Auckland, New Zealand. Live from the future, live from the future, as many would say. We have a big guest coming up, if we can get a hold of him, Michael Shaw, a prominent researcher of the good old boys at United Nations, HQ, who are trying to set up this Agenda 21 takeover. Total taxation, total enslavement, total disintegration of the US Constitution is what we have to talk about today. Pending the arrival of Michael Shaw.
Michael Shaw and, is here.
Michael Shaw is right here. There you go. See? Witchcraft. It just happens. The UN's working for us. How are you going, Michael?
I am fine. Thank you very much.
Glad you could join us.
I'm happy to be here, though the subject that I address dismays anybody who hears it for the first time. But if we don't hear it for the first time, we're going to cook in its juices, and that will be a whole lot worse than just hearing about it and reconciling that we need to take some action in order to repel this globalist invasion of local communities.
You know, it really is a tough one, isn't it, Michael, because the UN have built up this image of themselves of being this humanitarian, aid-giving, equalizing force in the world to curtail evil America and, you know, to bring peace and harmony to the world. How do we start eroding that fanciful vision of these monsters and start getting back to reality?
Well, I think that in America, there is a broad coalition of people who understand that the UN is not what you've just described. I think America has always been suspect of international organizations, and I think the way the UN gets his message delivered in America today is such that most Americans think that they are an ineffective and unthreatening organization that pretends to do good here and there, but messes up most things that they touch. But what Americans
don't understand... That's a common thread in general, isn't it? That everyone takes politicians for complete idiots, and sure, some of them are, but they don't realize that there are intelligent, sophisticated individuals who have a time phase plan behind the scenes.
Well, there's no question but that that's the case. There's no question that the UN has successfully organized multinational corporations to be part of its onslaught, there's no question that the United Nations has control over domestic governments here in the U.S. certainly, and really all
for
around
sure,
the
Michael.
World.
Totally agreed, and we'll come back and actually really break this down after this break. Join us on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. This is the Vinny Eastwood Show.
United we stand, and divided we fall. Unity, please don't desert me.
Look at me, driving, and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure, my cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations, I'll let them all die in exasperation. Have them all healed from the lacerations, have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison just because I don't like them. And I can do anything with no permission. I have it all under my command because I can guide a missile by satellite, by satellite,
welcome
by
back,
satellite.
Welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show.
Through a telescope.
Vinny Eastwood Show, Phil.
And I can end the planet.
I'm your host for the next 2 hours, Will Ryan, and we have a great guest on today. We're talking about the socialist guys at the UN and their dissolvement of your civil liberties and sovereignty, whether you're in the United States, the UK, Australia, New Zealand. They want your land. They're coming for you. And they're doing it softly, aren't they, Michael? Michael, would you care to introduce yourself, and then perhaps we can get into the whole beginnings of the UN and some of the precursors there?
Well, I'm a regular American living on the central coast of California. I had a career in developing self-storage projects around the West. I've liquidated that as I learned and discovered about Agenda 21 10 years ago. And so for the last 10 years, I and others in my community really have put together an organization called freedomadvocates.org. We have a very extended and exhausting website that will trace through for you the origins and the nature and the application of Agenda 21 here in the U.S. and really around the world. We have contributors to our information block coming from all over the U.S. and really from every English-speaking country around the world, because there is no one in the world who is unaffected by this globalist UN program. So the dedication that we have today is simply to spread this word, the word that will not be spread by major media, because major media is controlled by the forces that are behind the Agenda 21 world government program. And in fact, you know, maybe to start the discussion, you know, I can begin by saying, you know, it's not just the UN. It is a philosophy that is espoused by the UN that has been adopted by the powers that count. You know, from the banking interests to the multinational corporate interests to the political parties around the world. In fact, one organization that is firmly committed to these UN sustainable development or Agenda 21 ideas, which we'll talk about in detail in a bit, but one of the organizations that evidences the worldwide commitment to this program is called the International Democrat Union. It's IDU.org. And the IDU.org is a consortium of 80 political parties from around the world who identify themselves as being right of center. It is led by the U.S.'s GOP, the Conservative Party in Great Britain, and the Labour Party in Australia. And the purpose of the IDU is to seek the universal adoption of the UN's Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So it's not just the UN doing this, it is political parties from all around the world that are bringing this forward. And, you know, the leftist political parties are clearly on board, but so are the right side of the political spectrum. Now, the U.S. delegation at the IDU is headed up by George Bush Sr. and by Governor Haley Barbour, who used to be the chairman of the Republican Party. Now, the real problem here is that the IDU, in its purpose statement, calls for the universal adoption of the UN's Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Now, why that's so devastating for Americans is that the Universal Declaration of Human Rights says in Article 29, subsection C, it says that all the rights and the freedoms granted herein are subject to the purposes and principles as adopted from time to time by the United Nations. So what that means is that every right you have under UN protocol, as adopted by the GOP, is subject to somebody's determination that that right can be withdrawn.
Nothing. And they can reform those policies anytime they will. Is that not correct?
That's
they
right.
Can,
yeah. Nothing is immutable. Yeah. It defeats the entire notion of the American experiment, which is that our rights come from our Creator and that they are unalienable and that government cannot interfere. That's why the American government is limited in its scope. But you see, we're being undermined by the very political process that we fight over, you know, as though there was a real fight between Democrats and Republicans, when in fact there is no such real fight. Both parties are committed to globalism.
Oh, definitely. I totally agree. It's so evident in any major field of policy formation you can possibly look at. There is no real right anymore. A lot of the left complain. There's no real left anymore, you know, as if they just want out-and-out Marxism. But there is no real right, and there is no Republican right in the United States standing up for the Constitution. There is, thankfully, a growing Tea Party movement. People have tried to hijack that. But a lot of the good folks involved still know, you know, are going to stick to their guns. But, you know, there is no... George Bush Jr. was no conservative, was he?
Well, I'm a bit confused about what conservatives and liberals are today. It seems to me that they're simply two sides of one coin, because that coin is always a globalist coin. You know, I like to think of Thomas Jefferson as the classical liberal.
Yeah.
Vested on the idea, the understanding that America was mankind, you know, the Declaration of Independence in America was mankind's greatest achievement.
Well,
and
classical,
today we've abandoned it.
Well, you know, my understanding of classical liberalism is it's more kind of like what's deemed far-right anti-statism today. Sort of anarcho-capitalist libertarian models.
Well, I don't think it's anarcho.
Sorry, Michael?
I don't think it's anarcho. I mean, I'd agree with much of that statement, but I don't think that Thomas Jefferson, was an anarchist in any contextual meaning of that term. I think he was clearly a limited government advocate, and to the extent that that's the reflection of classical liberalism, then I'm completely with him.
Today, the right and the left, liberalism in a completely different context, don't they? All these definitions get lost and altered and muddied, and liberalism today means basically equal law, equal opportunity, which the UN is great at pushing, this idea of equality, just like they're great at pushing this idea of sustainability. They become propagandist terms for collectivist, catch-all, broadleaf laws.
And it results in human beings being viewed as chattel. And, without the natural rights that that our Declaration recites that we are imbued with by virtue of our nature as human beings.
So, Michael, a lot of people will agree with us on these issues that, you know, no one wants to lose their liberties. No one wants to, you know, even modern liberals don't really, really want to lose their freedom, do they? They just don't
understand. No, they don't. They don't. And that's why an understanding of Agenda 21 is vital for anyone who wants to have a life that is truly their own.
But seeing as you've done so much research, Michael, and a lot of folks wouldn't have embarked on anything like you have, can you tell us how the UN really got started, like going back to the League of Nations and some of the Nazis involved, and really sort of break it down, the fascist roots of the United Nations?
Well, I would not consider myself a historian of the United Nations, but clearly the thrust for world government has always existed in the hearts and minds of some men. And the modern version of that certainly began with the League of Nations, a concept that was rejected by the American people. As it faded away, the groundwork for the United Nations was laid out, and FDR and Truman, caused American acceptance and involvement in the United Nations. They put their headquarters right here in New York City, and we've been paying the bulk of the fees to cause this organization's existence, from day one. But if we are to look at the nature of the United Nations, we don't get a better view of it than by understanding their program called Agenda 21. Now, it's dispersed around the world with a warm and fuzzy covering called Sustainable Development. But we need to understand that Agenda 21, and you can view this by going to the United Nations website, Agenda 21 is Sustainable Development. They're interchangeable terms. And, if we then look at what is Agenda 21, we can find three documents that basically outline it that all come from the United Nations or from their close associates. And those documents are simply called Agenda 21. This was released at the 1992 Earth Summit held in Rio de Janeiro that was attended by George Bush. He signed the Agenda 21 protocol on behalf of the United States. And they do these clever things. They've labeled Agenda 21 soft law treaty, meaning that you don't have to get your Senate to ratify it. You don't even have to promise to implement it. You just go home and implement it anyway. So what happened was when George Bush signed the Agenda 21 protocol in Rio de Janeiro in 1992, he brought it home. His term was shortly up. Bill Clinton came to office. And one of his first orders of priority was to establish the President's Council on Sustainable Development. And in doing so, he took the Agenda 21 protocol and he introduced it to every federal cabinet agency. Every agency of the federal government today has its role in implementing Agenda 21. Now, for cynics in the audience, I simply suggest you start Googling Agenda 21. You can Google Agenda 21 in the Department of Agriculture, Agenda 21 plus the Department of Education, Agenda 21 plus the Department of State, and you will find the litany. They're not hiding it. It's all in plain sight. You'll find a litany of commitments by each of these departments and action plans for purposes of implementing Agenda 21.
So, Michael, it's easy to see how the UN gained so much ground since 1992. You know, they've built up this whole global warming scam. They've built up this idea that man is the enemy. There's overpopulation. We need to vaccinate. And if we do a really good job vaccinating, we can hopefully kill about 500 million people, as Bill Gates has just claimed a couple of weeks ago, that we can hopefully reduce the world's population by 1 billion. If we do a really good job vaccinating the third world. So we can see how they've gained traction in recent times since 1992, the Rio Earth Summit. How did they get to that point of gaining so much momentum between their founding and 1992? What would you say was their crescendo?
I think it's the process of how humans work. Those who seek power, those who have power, many of them, come together for increasing their power. And so you have multinational corporations leading politicians from around the world, organizations and academics contributing to, and they're able to find, birds of a like feather who have worked tirelessly since the UN's founding to bring about the UN's promise, which is a one-world government. And it has gotten to the point where if you're not part of that system, you simply run out of town. There was a day when I thought Bill Gates was an honorable man, and then he was hit with his lawsuits in Europe, with threatened lawsuits in the United States, and practical talk of busting up his software empire, he negotiated his way out of those problem areas. But what appears to be the way he negotiated his way out was simply to comply with the system for world government. And I'll contend that that's the dynamic that has affected so many in the, you know, who have achieved great things, that their achievements are to be taken away from them if they don't comply with the gang.
And, yeah, their work has to be in the vein of the central powers of this planet, pretty much.
That's right. It has to
be in keeping with this world government agenda. And there's been multiple people, including individuals like Strobe Talbot from the United Nations, who've come out on record saying we want a one world government, saying there has to be a one world government, saying there has to be a population reduction of a huge magnitude. These aren't debatable. And it's so difficult to get through to some people at times, especially here in Auckland, New Zealand, and New Zealand in general. The UN has such a positive image because it's just like party politics here between the fake right and the fake left. You're either one or the other. And in the global sense, America's not too popular with all the wars that the corrupt elite have been fighting. Therefore, by default, the UN becomes popular.
Well, that's really unfortunate, given that the UN and the U.S. have been joined somewhat at the hip, and attribute all this wrongdoing and this creation of a world government to the U.S. without attributing it also to the UN is a mistake that people around the world can make. And it's really unfortunate, but there's no denial that the United States of America has lost its way as it has embodied UN policy throughout our country, and that includes the foreign policy that we've embarked on for the last 50 years. You know, when I was a boy in the 50s, we were called the ugly Americans because of our activities in a colonial world. And today, I know that America's image has been hardly damaged by its policeman role in respect to the creation of this world government that is really a UN creation. It's an
sure
American...
Thing, Michael.
Pardon?
We've got to go to a break now, sorry, mate. But join us on the other side at the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're with Michael Shaw, prominent UN researcher, and we'll get back into it right after this break.
My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and we'll respect our right to live here on the land. It's Tino Ranga, Tina Tonga, we don't own the banks. The parliament does so where do you have a stand? They paying their bills off your back with hefty tax demands. Misleading our youth with alcohol, TV, contrabands. So kids act up and disturb our community. Uninformed public then consents to our planned absurdity. What? Replace our human rights with commercial slavery. They print a $100 and loan it to you. They charge interest on the loan but don't print the interest, so there'll never be enough money to pay off all the debt. What do you get? Crash and burn.
Oh yeah, folks. You cannot repay the debt.
Oh, it's too late. Hey.
This is what your loving UN has done right throughout the third world. Their IMF and World Bank arms have indebted foreign nations and paid off people like Robert Mugabe to default on their loans so they can own them. They want to own you because you don't have any ownership. This is Marxism, baby. You don't own anything. Ownership is inequality. So make us all equal under the law and have a tiny elite run the place and turn this planet into a giant reservation. That seems to be the solution. If you really know the hearts and minds of the UN, it gets worse than that, actually. Michael, glad to have you back.
Good. Happy to be here.
What do you think of their banking arms and their corruption and their lack of expose of the world banking system, even as it freefalls into... an abyss.
Well, I'm not so sure that free fall isn't planned and arranged and organized. I mean, history's had fiat money systems again and again. And, you know, the way you bust a fiat money system is it's either the forces of economic reality that come in and implode these funny money monetary systems, or it is the creators of the monetary system that actually work to implode their own system. And they do that because they're ready with another monetary system that they've already got control of. And by imploding these dishonest fiat systems, they're able to actually garner more control than they have under these phony fiat systems. And so I think that's what's in the works today. And of course, you know, the international banking cartel that runs the monetary systems here in the U.S. and around the world are part of this world order dynamic. In fact, without a fiat money system, they would not be as far along as they are today. And, you know, once you understand the action plan for Agenda 21 and you realize the nature of our monetary systems and you recognize the political realities that have been adopted by governments everywhere, including here in the U.S. and the political parties here in the U.S., you begin to go, oh, my, we're surrounded. And that's where we are today. We're surrounded. Now, it doesn't mean we can't get out of it, but it means we've got to come to recognize who we are, and I say that as Americans. We need to come to understand why America was the greatest achievement in human history and how it is that the American achievement is under such attack today. We need to understand not just the UN, but the Agenda 21 program, which may have originated at the UN, but now is in every county in the country. So it is our county leaders who are taking us down this plank to oblivion. And that's what we need to understand, and that's something we can fight about. Because let's face it, as average Americans, you can't go out and do much about the UN. What are you going to do? Throw its building, you know, into the water that it borders? No, we cannot throw the UN out. But what we can do is expunge our county, expunge our city, expunge our local school district or fire district, all of which are implementing Agenda 21 policies.
And you're right, Michael. Totally right. I mean, like, there's a lot of good old boys and guys are ready for a fight, you know, but the problem is when these little monsters do things by stealth and intellectually legislate your rights away from you right under your own nose, and your radar's not up to pick it up, it just happens.
That's right.
And, you know, and 20, 30 years later,
today,
you wake up on the shores of the New World Order. I mean, you it won't be America anymore. You're losing your country. You're losing your sovereignty. You're losing your dollar. It's all being destroyed, and it is by design. It's absolutely provably documented design. And
yeah,
if the UN was a force for good, they would be pulling up. And I mean, the day the UN starts talking about fractional reserve banking is the day I start saying, okay, they're being a little bit honest here. I get told all the time how there's good people in the UN too, and don't worry, there's only a few evil ones. Hey, I haven't heard anyone in the UN talk anything about the dangers of the vaccines they push all around the planet, the fluoridated water they push on India at four times the level they do in the United States. You know, the banking system as a whole. No, they just want these little Ponzi schemes. Everything becomes a false flag, you see. They want to see the US dollar decline. They want to see the euro collapse eventually. So they can have so that gives them the pretext to push forth their global cashless society solution. And so everything, like Rahm Emanuel, Barack Obama's right-hand man, says, you know, don't let anything go to waste. Don't let any crisis go to waste.
No, and that's precisely the principles that operate the Agenda 21 protocol. Create the crisis, have the predetermined solution, impose it, and then begin the process again so that we move step by step toward this world order. Let's spend some time and get to the brass nuts of what Agenda 21 is. You know, so that your listeners can begin to contemplate what this scheme is all about, and how this scheme goes from the global to the local so that they can recognize it in their community and do something about it. Because we're not going to change Washington, D.C. The political parties have a total lock on who the next president is, and I can guarantee you that whoever the Democrats nominate or whoever the Republicans nominate in this next electoral scheme, these are people who have been vetted.
Yeah, we can't vote our way out of this. We can't. So Michael, can you explain this whole Agenda 21 scenario to someone who is an ardent skeptic, because there's so many people around my town, in fact, who have read Agenda 21 and still think it's good. They want to see the fall of society. They want to see us with no cars and no jobs and no homes. And so can you break it down in a way to convince the total skeptic out there?
I don't think I can do that, because I think the total skeptic is a fella who doesn't want to see good. Amazingly, a lot of people have just fallen into the trap. And I say, if you've fallen into this trap and you believe this nonsense, you know, and you're willing to accept that the UN, in a document, has called for an 85% reduction in human population, and if you're okay with that, you know, your skepticism is not going to be dissuaded by someone like me. The people that need to be spoken to are the people, and this is the broad mass of people, the people who aren't particularly familiar with what the globalist plan is, but know that things are falling apart. They don't want to go to the airport and be groped. They don't want to see their children without economic opportunity. You know, and they certainly are repulsed by the idea that world population is to be reduced by 85% under the Agenda 21 protocol. Those are the people we need to be talking to. The cynics, I say, go stuff yourself, live in your own world, create your own mass destruction someplace away from me. But
yeah, totally. I agree.
But most people aren't cynical that way. Most people are simply uninformed, and we're getting to the point where it's late enough in this ball game that if you're not informed, then you need to consider yourself a useful idiot, because we cannot win this war unless we know what we're fighting against. And if you don't understand these concepts of sustainable development, you have no chance of being part of helping society crawl out of this deep hole.
And break down the differences you see between real environmentalism and sustainable development model.
Well, real environmentalism has to do with making sure that the air supply and the water supply stay clean. And I'll put government's role in respect to the environment. I'll put borders on the government's role, and beyond keeping the water and the air clean, I don't think government has a role in the environment. Now, that doesn't mean you can pass the Clean Water Bill and take control of every pond and puddle in the United States. When I say clean water, I mean, you know, our sources for drinking need to be kept clean. That means that I can't put an infusion well down into the aquifer and dump all my poisons into it. You know, it means that you know, if I'm a farmer, you know, there's going to be some limitation legitimately imposed that restricts the kinds of chemical processes I can use on my crops that may have the prospect of seeping into the water supply. And similarly, it means that I can impose restrictions on industry that pollute the air. But beyond that, government's role is limited to protecting the property of another from pollution by you. In other words, I can't pollute my neighbor's property. But as to my own property, so long as I'm not harming the air or the water, it's not government's business as to what I do with it. And so when we spread the environmental message, as sustainable development does, into a creed where the environment is more important than man, and that's the meaning of the environmental movement under the UN Agenda 21 protocol, we find that everything is justified on an environmental call. And what that leads to is exactly what Agenda 21 is all about, and that is the creation of a new system of justice where private property is disregarded, where natural law and unalienable rights are not considered, and where public-private partnership becomes the economic forum for the day. And public-private partnership is a term average citizens are beginning to see crop up in their local communities and in their local press. And so let's pause for a moment and talk about what a public-private partnership is, because this is the model by which all activities are being rearranged to. A public-private partnership is when a business or an individual, but we'll say a business, partners with government in the pursuit of a governmental objective. These typically are Agenda 21 objectives. So, for instance, in your hometown, you'll have an affordable housing program. And affordable housing means to build housing with partners of government who then receive an $80,000 subsidy for each 800 square foot apartment or small condo that is built by private partners of government. And then government determines at what price these can be sold and who they can be sold to, and government determines the rules by which you live by. In addition, government then determines who and at what price you can sell this unit. So what we have operating in America today, I'll use my county as an example. Santa Cruz County has received $350,000 of government, federal government promises to build out affordable housing units in this community. So the local government then turns around and finds a public-private partner, a developer, who will take this $80,000 subsidy and comply with these rules. And then what we end up with is government choosing who lives in these places at very reduced rates, because the developer's made his profit, he's covered his costs with the subsidy, and anything he gets in the sale price, it's just profit to him. So it's very profitable for the developer, very costly for the taxpayer, and useful idiot who is then the recipient of this below market housing called affordable housing. Oftentimes,
we're going to have to continue this the other side of the break. Sorry, Michael.
No problem.
Join us with Michael Shaw to continue on this dissertation of the criminal UN and their imposing structure that's coming down. Show with Will. I was beginning to think I was at Chateau de Rothschild there. Delightfully calming, evil music. We are joined by Michael Shaw from freedomadvocates.org. How dare you be a freedom advocate, Michael? Can you carry on informing us about this UN Agenda 21 takeover, please, mate?
Well, let's get down to some brass tacks. What is Agenda 21? I like to break it down into three categories that reflect its game plan. The first is the step-by-step abolition of private property, and it's cleverly arranged. It's wrapped in environmental principles and in social social justice principles, and the efforts are clear. Today, America has 50% of the number of ranchers it had 20 years ago. Ranching's being forced down and out. And the reason for that is that the Agenda 21 program calls for what's called a wildlands project. The land use component of Agenda 21 breaks into two parts. The wildlands project, which is to encompass over 50% of the land mass of the United States, and this land mass is to be devoid of human presence, and it is to prohibit all resource extraction on those lands. That's why Americans can't tap the oil. That's why in the state of Montana, you can no longer conduct mining operations. You can no longer conduct timber operations through most of the American West. And in the state of Montana, again, half the trees are dead because the forests aren't being managed at all. They are being prepped to burn, and the burn is designed to force people off of those landscapes, and that is exactly what's happening through the West. So the second element of Agenda 21 is education for global citizenship. Last year, there was a poll that took a look at last year's high school graduates and college graduates. And the poll found out that over 50% of American graduates last year identified themselves not as Americans, but as global citizens. You see, the educational process that is being mandated by the federal government mandates the educational process, is working, at least by design of federal education bureaucrats. And that means that Americans are no longer coming out with an understanding of American history and American traditions and American ideals. Instead, they're coming out as soldiers for sustainable development. The number of young people, I call it a massive fifth column operating in America today, that are recent college graduates who are in the sustainable machinery with jobs that are usually publicly funded and that are arranging this future for all the rest of us is astounding. The educational system may be dumbing us down, but it's working precisely to what the globalist goals for education are. And the third element of Agenda 21 is control over all human action. And, you know, we see evidence of that, this week with the TSA screening dynamic here in the United States, where, our privacy is totally obliterated and control over our action is secured. And we see that with the advent of cameras everywhere. In the city of London, the average citizen is photographed 300 times a day.
What's wrong with 4 million cameras, Michael? I mean, it's going to stop some terrorism.
Well, yeah.
You brought up a point before, and it's something I've thought a bit about myself, and I'm undecided. It's one of the few things I haven't got a radical opinion on. I'm undecided as to whether someone calling themselves a global citizen is a good or a bad thing entirely. Because in one sense, you could argue that if it weren't for the UN's form of global citizenry, it might be people actually realizing we're all on this planet together and there are global issues going on that largely are scams and we need to curtail. On the other hand, you could say it's a dissolvement of national sovereignty and a realization that you're part of a nation with a proud history.
Well,
so how do you really see that?
Well, I see that if one is to justify the elimination of nations on the basis that we're all in this together and we're all part of a broader global community, then, where does that philosophy stop? Why then is there a reason to delineate families? And, of course, part of the global path we're on today is a plan to eliminate the delineation of families.
Yeah, it's we are all one sort of stuff, one consciousness, and this is what the UN are really about. They are occultists, not just cultists, occultists.
Occultists, and, I think that's right.
And I really want to get into that next segment, if you care to join us in the next hour, and really get into how a lot of people think the UN is a secular, rationalist, sensible, relativist, atheist movement, when really it's Lucifer Publishing, it's Alice Bailey, it's Benjamin Graham, it's all these weirdos, Seventh Ray Institute, and oh, it's just complete nutcases, if you ask me. So I really want to try and get into that too with Michael, if you have a bearing on the occult side of this equation.
Well, I don't particularly, but I certainly hear people who take that view, and it makes sense to me. I kind of stick with the basics of what Agenda 21 is, how it's in your local community, and what people need to do to kick it out of your community. We can't kick the UN out of the United States, but we can kick its policies out of our city hall. And it is the city halls that are responsible for the implementation. The program is a global to local one, and if you think it's not in your town, you are sadly mistaken.
And join us on the other side for the hour two. We'll see you right back. On AmericanFreedomRadio.com. I'm sitting in for Vinny for an undisclosed period of time. So I'm your host, Will Ryan, and we are joined by Michael Shaw from FreedomAdvocates.org. And Michael has done a huge amount of research and really broken down the whole Agenda 21 scenario that's coming to a town near you. In fact, it's already running a town near you. And, you know, Michael, we were going through how they're trying to consolidate the planet into this one world order and dissolve all sort of any manner of sovereign rights. Habeas corpus, Magna Carta, US Constitution, it all doesn't matter anymore. It's just history, just pieces of paper to them. But many people would ask why. Why do you think they want to do all this, Michael?
Well, you know, we've lived a life, you know, let's take the baby boomer generation. We've lived a life that's been, you know, relatively comfortable and relatively threat-free. And we've become adapted to believing that's how the world operates, that evil doesn't really exist. But lo and behold, it does exist. And it's been not lying dormant, but it's been in the shadows, building its system, taking control of the monetary dynamics worldwide, taking control of the political institutions, and now taking control of your town. It's not coming to your town. I can promise you that wherever you are in America, it is in your town. And you know, evil didn't evaporate 100 years ago. evil is awaiting its greatest assault on humanity in all of history. So you asked about the spiritual or occultist dynamic. I have no doubt that there is an occultist dynamic that is rooted in the world government dynamic, and it's evident if you study the documents of Agenda 21. It's a UN production called Agenda 21. The second document's 1,150 pages. It's called the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report. This is what's poised now to take the place of the global warming charade as that's begun to fall apart. It hasn't completely fallen apart, clearly, but it's begun to fall apart. And so what they're ready to do is to bring in the issue of, all the species are going extinct, and we must rearrange. It's a global crisis that must rearrange how human beings interact on the planet. And that means that human beings must be taken off of the broad landscape and put in stack 'em and pack 'em city centers called smart growth centers. And that's what's happening all across America. In fact, I read just this morning that that Russia is now designing the plan to have all Russian citizens live in one of 20 urban centers. In other words, want to vacate their entire landscape of people.
A cashless society control grid is what they want, Michael.
Absolutely.
We'll be back right after this next break. But, yeah, don't herd yourself into the control grid. Don't accept a cashless society. You're listening to TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. We'll be right back. Michael Shaw from freedomadvocates.org, and not really feeling like dancing, although it is a good song, Nowhere to Run. You know, I couldn't believe it years ago when I was told by a good friend that the first publishing house and the current publishing house of the UN was Lucifer Trust, renamed Lucis Trust. It's linked to a whole bunch of New Age groups. It's admittedly a New Age theosophic institution. Alice Bailey was ahead of it. Lucifer Trust, publishing arm. And people accuse them of being New Agers and stuff, and, it's just a Christian conspiracy theory. Bunch of right-wingers. Quite funny, isn't it, how facts often get in the way of emotions of people who just want to feel good about doing something for the UN and going and helping little African children. What do you think about all their aid programs, Michael? What do you think about their intentions there?
Well, you know, I think UN finances have always been circumspect. It was Marie Strong, who was actually the secretariat for the Earth Summit in 1992 that launched Agenda 21. It was he, who incidentally is a billionaire, who was found engaged in the oil for food scandal. His son was the lead culprit in that mess that involved Saddam Hussein and a lot of UN money. So as a consequence, Marie Strong, their hailed leader, has had to flee Western governments and is now heading the Agenda 21 program in China. So, you know, they're just filled with all kinds of scandals and misplays. And when you look at the broader globalist dynamic and you include the World Bank and the World Trade Organization and the Bank of International Settlements and the regional trade organizations, it's always wrapped in corruption, inside deals, and in frauds. You made mention earlier of the the lending dynamic, and you know that's part of it, is to put these countries, third world countries, on the edge of bankruptcy, such that UN operatives can come in and take control of all policy making. I expect that same dynamic to play out in California as our financial condition worsens. It certainly will with the people that were elected here a couple weeks ago, and as it worsens, will California surrender its state sovereignty to the federal government? You know, will the federal government sell California to China to reduce some of its debt? I mean, who knows? The games that could be played as we've gotten ourselves deep into this fiat money system boondoggle can be played a thousand different ways, none of which serve the interests of any person living in America. So we've abandoned our principles. We've abandoned an honest monetary system. We've adopted this United Nations inspired globalist remake of how human beings interact. And the consequence is now that everybody's feeling uncomfortable. Few know why, but I think we can trace all the roots to the implementation of a world globalist plan designed to abolish private property, watch us at every turn, and reduce human population by 85%. You know, those three headlines are enough to rally up any real American to ask, what's really going on? How do I find out more? And then what do I do? And
anyone can find these facts with a basic search engine. Can find the number of times Maurice Strong has called for a new world order, or George Soros, and the amount of money behind them.
What I don't understand
is people say they're skeptical of conspiracy theories. They're skeptical of something happening, but they're not skeptical of the status quo. They don't apply their skepticism equally, obviously.
Well,
and
you know,
they go, conspiracy theorists make money off DVDs and books and T-shirts, but George Soros and Al Gore, they're not making any money, are they?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what world are those people?
The other side of that, Will, is there's nothing theoretical about what I'm talking about. It is all in black and white. If I'm projecting something into the future, I'll say this is a projection, as I just did.
They'll say you're taking real facts and then misinterpreting them and making them fit your own worldview. This is what they always come up with.
Well, you know, I'm just taking the facts. You know, by and large, is taking the facts and expressing what the facts are. There is no theory involved in the facts of reciting what Agenda 21 calls for. There's nothing theoretical about it, and I'll argue that there's nothing conspiratorial about it. A conspiracy is when you and I sit around and plan to rob a bank tomorrow. But once we walk into that bank, it's no longer a conspiracy. You know, it's an action. And the action for the implementation of Agenda 21 has been taken in your community already, and I don't care where you are in America or, for that matter, anywhere in the world.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We've got this not too far out of my town. There's a woman called Mels Barton, and she sort of campaigns a large sector of Auckland behind Agenda 21. She, in fact, has links to Agenda 21 on her leftist environmentalist website, and it's just so they're not true environmentalists either. They don't care about having introduced cats ripping up endangered species all over New Zealand and things like that. I mean, they're kind of like the equivalent to Christians on Sunday, you know what I mean?
Mm.
You know, and not trying to be too mean there, but I mean they really are fake to the point where wearing a token, if I can wear a little badge on my chest saying I care about breast cancer or something, or if I can have a token of giving a damn about humanity, then I'll take it. And one of the biggest tokens these days is climate change and United Nations policy. shows you care. If you go to summits, if you go to Mexico this year or Copenhagen last year, you're a caring individual. And these people get an incredible amount of support, Michael. They get an incredible amount of funding. Because you're on the bad guy's side, it seems. Things seem to go your way, you know?
Well, in a fiat system, money is available for those who are pushing world government. You know, and money is not available generally for those of us who are working to expose it. But you know, that makes the battle against Goliath all that much more interesting and dynamic, because you know, the world is on a dangerous path. I don't think anybody living today would disagree with that. And so the next question those people should ask, including the skeptics, is why are we on such a path? Is it because the principles, you know, talking about America again, the principles of individual liberty and equal justice rather than social justice and the idea of private property have been so horrible that the country and the world and humanity itself is falling apart? Or is it because we've been infected with this globalist disease that is designed to make us chattel of ruling elite? And that ruling elite is out there. It's easily recognizable, maybe not by individuals, but there are certainly those individuals that come to mind that are intimately involved in the creation of a one-world order, where your life is to be directed and owned by those in control. Human beings are on their path to become livestock. And unless we can wake up and turn the tide early enough, and it's getting late in that battle, then our offspring and even ourselves are doomed to this new world order.
It's like I've said it a number of times, and I repeat it again, you know, that they hook the fake conservatives with the terror, with the fake wars, with Al-Qaeda, their mystery intelligence front. And then they hook the left, on the other side of the coin, with the phony environmentalism. And then a lot of even the fake right and some of the real right can see that the left is wrong about the global warming. And then some of the controlled left can see the right is wrong about Al-Qaeda and the illegal wars in Afghanistan and the Middle East. But not either side can see the whole picture, and they can't work it out. And so they're both getting worked on one side of the coin. And therefore the coin, you know, rises to the top. And, you know, who controls the money supply on this planet, I wonder? No one asks that question. Not either controlled side asks real questions like that.
Well, I think you've expressed that very well. I call it the artificial dialectic. You know, the right and the left are two sides of one coin, and I just keep asking myself, why can't people see that the right and the left combine to create the circumstance that's taking us down? And both sides will point to the other side as being wrong about certain things, as you've just indicated. Why can't we emerge with the notion in the hearts and minds of typical human beings that say the right and the left are both wrong, and there are elements of the right and the left, you know, which are not the surviving elements, but which are right, you know. When the left criticizes the right, they're usually right. When the right criticizes the left, they're usually right. But the focus of the combined effort is almost always wrong. It's taking us down this path, the world government. It's taking us in America away from the political recognition that every human being has certain unalienable rights that are imbued within us, granted by our Creator, and for which government exists to protect, not to take.
But you see, you lost them right there. You lost them right there. You know why? Because you assert that rights come from a creator to the individual and then to government and so on and so forth. That is why they fundamentally hate you and disagree with you. And this is the problem, you see? That is the fundamental reason why, because you get into the whole equation of whether there's a creator or not.
And well, You know, I'm just quoting the American Declaration of Independence.
Beyond the scope of what I get into, but, you know, I tend to think that the major theses of their Hegelian dialectic today, that is their problem-reaction solution that the UN uses today, is global warming. And what would your case against the hypotheses of man-made or anthropogenic global warming be?
Well, it would start with the idea that things aren't warming. I mean, as a matter of fact, for the last 10 to 15 years, things haven't been warming. They're cooling. And I'd also say there's some good scientific evidence that in the case of warming and CO2 release, that the cause and effect has been reversed by Al Gore. In other words, warming precedes the rise in CO2 levels. And if you took Al Gore's movie and took the, you know, that wall-long chart that he had that had global temperatures on one line and CO2 release on the other line, you couldn't tell the cause and the effect. You couldn't tell which came first. But other scientists have clearly put forward the historical record that warming precedes CO2 release. So we've reversed cause and effect. The cause of CO2 release is warming. The cause of warming is not CO2. And when we look today, there's a huge band of scientists who've rejected global warming. There's a narrow band of mostly IPCC scientists or other government scientists who continue to hold on to the global warming hysteria. It's just become patently clear that it is economics and politics that is driving the forces that argue for man-made global warming, and the evidence is beginning to show that it's sunspots. You know, the evidence shows that we haven't been warming for a long time, and the further evidence shows that CO2 release comes following warming. It does not precede, nor is it a cause of warming. So all of the actions to reduce CO2, you know, including your exhalation, are put to us in a way that is designed to create the crisis that they have solutions for, and the solution is to depopulate us and to subject us to a one-world tyranny.
You know, on the climate change debate, this is something that is a sleight of hand, is it not? It's just such a magician sort of trick to not show which precedes which. Does temperature precede CO2 or vice versa? And the ice core record clearly shows that temperature increases and then you see an increase in CO2 lagging by around 600 years on average. That 600-year delay can be explained by the fact that the oceans are the largest contributor to CO2, evaporation from them, and the period of time it takes to heat the huge volume of water with a high specific heat capacity to the point where you see something, you see a result in terms of CO2 in the atmosphere. But if you try and tell the average climate cultist that, they don't believe in cosmic radiation, they don't believe in ice core records, they don't understand that the level of CO2 during the Cambrian period, when the Earth was marginally warmer, was up to 7,000 parts per million. And now we have a stupid idiot organization called 350.org who swears by their facts that we have to reduce our current carbon level of 385 parts per million down to 350, and then it's just party time, the world's safe, everything's great, banking system's perfect, there's no false flag terror. These people are just so out of touch.
Well, and I think, though, there is a dawning recognition that that's the case. global warming is not listed by Americans as a primary or significant or top-ranking concern.
You're dead right there, and we'll follow this up after the break. We're going to start talking global carbon taxation and their plan to really put the nail in the coffin. We're with Michael Shaw here at the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Henry Kissinger are jamming with our tax money. You know, if it wasn't entirely obvious already that the UN is a culpable, criminal, just occultic, takeover, complete tyrannical agency, the fact that their solution, their humanitarian solution, so the problems on the ground, as they tell us, as they dictate to us what we've got to be active about, that you've got to change your light bulbs to mercury-filled ones, and you've got to stop driving your car, and don't preheat your oven for the apple pie, because that's selfish. Their solution to it all, though, is to tax the living daylights out of you, in addition to the thousands of taxes that already exist. This is the most insane tax since the window tax of, 1697 or something in Britain. It's even more insane than the window tax. It's taxing the air around us. The air I'm breathing right now and exhaling into into this microphone is being taxed. New Zealand is being taxed at an average rate of around 4% on fuel, power. It's unbelievable. What are your thoughts on the whole taxation model, Michael? What are your whole thoughts on, you know, this proposed 20% tax?
Well, you know, taxes in America are an interesting dynamic in that we have a federal constitution that pretty well limits the authority of the federal government for engaging in taxation. The original notion, the constitutional notion, is that it's import and excise taxes are to fund our federal government. And the 16th Amendment, under some question, was adopted that allowed for income taxes. But I think the argument can and has been made that the income tax levy was and is unconstitutional. There's even questions about the ratification process for the income tax. But to continue with a taxing program that is outside the scope of the constitutional limitations on taxation is really bothersome. But we've got a Congress and an executive department coupled with support from the judiciary in this country that simply doesn't pay attention to the constitutional limitations. It was George Bush Jr. who said, "Not a constitution, it's just a piece of paper." And so what we have subjected ourselves to is the possibility of a whole onslaught of taxing schemes all designed to advances toward this new world order. And, you know, it's become clear to me that taxation programs, whether they're at the federal, state, or local levels, have increasingly been dominated. The determination for these taxes is dominated by people who support the idea of world government. And we've got it causes me to reflect on one of the three documents that are the cornerstones of Agenda 21. The third document is called the Earth Charter. We talked about it a little bit earlier. The Earth Charter calls for an equalization of wealth for people within and between nations. And taxation is the tool, the great leveler that's used by advocates for world government to put everybody in the same boat. And we're not talking a nice boat, we're talking a boat. And the taxation program for the next decade is going to be one of those tools used by globalists in order to deplete the average citizen's earned wealth.
And, you know, a lot of people say, well, you have to have taxation and you have to, you know, society should spread the burden and we should, you know, pay so that other people who are less fortunate can have the basic essentials of life. And, you know, when I was real stupid about 16, 17, I used to think the same way. I used to think, yeah, we should tax all those rich people. Yeah, we should, you know, we should equal out a bit. But as you grow up and you learn from history and you actually develop a brain, you start to realize that those rich people actually aren't that rich. The rich people down the road with the nice boat and car and stuff, they're actually not that wealthy. And they are the middle class who are the engine for the economy so that working class people can have the jobs they have. The jobs they used to have anyway. Before we were deindustrialized, before the United States was deindustrialized in favor of Asian labor. So the whole taxation model is essentially takes away the individual's freedom. You know, if we all pay a dollar to the government, do we get back more than what we pay? Do you ever get back more than what you pay? Of course you don't. There are no winners in that. The only winners are the elite. The only winners are the bureaucrats who take their cut out of that $1 you pay them. And for every 30 you give them, they give you about one. And so how can people think that a big taxation model works?
Well, I would argue that the bureaucrats don't win either. They could get honest jobs and they'd be better off. But the whole idea of the disadvantage and what do we do about the disadvantaged situation, I'd argue two points in America anyway. The first is that if we were to recover our industry, our manufacturing capacity, and our system of private property, there would be plenty of things for the people who are unemployed now to do in a world that operated by the principles of free enterprise. But secondly, I'd argue that when government takes over the function of charity, that's nonsense. For the disadvantaged, for the person who's truly down and out, for the person who needs help, the only way that person can be helped is by the voluntary support of the people around him. And charities do well at that. But today, charities have just become an arm of government as we've had this faith-based initiative. And from the Catholic Church down, charities today say, oh, no, we need the government involved in our charitable work because we can't do it. Well, if they can't do it, then there's something wrong with the human psyche existent today because charity was the model, if we go back to the 19th century in the United States. And it worked well. It could work well again in the 21st century, but we first got to get Agenda 21 policies out of the U.S.
If you kick out big government, big taxation models, so people who believe in big government ultimately believe that the average person is bad and that you need some sort of central power, a daddy-like figure, to whack us all into line and take our pocket money. You know, and people who essentially think people, normal human beings, are good, like myself, realize that's not the way to go. You should reduce government and have it small and just run the bare minimum, the bare essentials, and to be decentralized and localized so they're less corruptible and more accountable. And at the same time, you realize that if you grow an economy and empower individuals, then they actually have more time to educate themselves. People are more educated. People are less stressed. There's less violence in a society. Pretty much every indicator of a society in decline goes down. Yeah. Violent crimes and assaults definitely go down.
And today we see the exact opposite.
The good people then have the power to run these charitable organizations, like you say. A lot of people are unaware of the number of largely Christian groups in the United States who are willing to pay to get foster children back off the state. And the foster children, but the state would rather just have these kids and abuse them and give them out to pedophiles and stuff. And you know, people are totally unaware of all the good groups out there trying to do something real that are being suppressed by big government and their corporate lackeys. And the UN's just another branch of that.
Well, I think that's exactly right. And, you know, the basics of good government to me are really quite simple. And and this country had it down for at least 50 years. Arguably you could say it didn't really begin falling apart until 150 years after it's begun. But today we're a shadow of what we were. And it's largely related to the growth in the size and scope of government. And, I think Americans, the Republican Party gives some lip service to that kind of thought, but when it boils right down, if you want to be a leader in the Republican Party, you've got to be on board with the globalist program. And that's why we get Republican nominees like John McCain or Bob Dole or the Bush family. And, I don't see much prospect of that changing until or unless the American people begin to understand the force that drives politics in America. And that force is Sustainable Development, Agenda 21. It is the cornerstone of each of the last four presidents' administrations. And until we rid ourselves of that dark cloud hanging over our head, we're going to be subjected to a further deterioration in our society, in our economic base, and in our peace prospects. So,
what do you think about all the token gestures of civil rights that the UN tries to prop up? Women's rights, gay rights, all these little hemispheres of rights while they try and disintegrate those of the masses?
Well, Article 29, subsection C of the UN Declaration of Human Rights is key to understanding the answer to that question. Because in that provision, they say all the rights and freedoms granted herein are subject to the policies and principles as adopted from time to time by the United Nations. That means that whoever the man behind the black curtain is can decree suddenly that the rights that were granted to women are expunged. In other words, all rights are immutable. Nothing is lasting. Nothing is etched in stone. So if you're an indigenous person or a woman or a child and you think, oh, the UN is protecting me from those dastardly adult males, just recognize that whatever turned their thought against adult white males can turn against any other societal group because there is no binding, overriding principle that governs the UN. It is whoever is standing behind that black curtain pulling the levers, and nobody, and nothing is protected.
Totally agree. And it goes back to the same names. Like David Rockefeller pops up a lot in this whole equation, does he not?
Oh, absolutely.
David Rockefeller is just, and he works in tightly with Maurice Strong also.
Yeah.
And Maurice Strong actually wrote a book which was published by the Trilateral Commission. It's called Beyond Interdependence, The Meshing of the World's Economy and the Earth's Ecology. And in the foreword, he wrote this. He wrote, "This interlocking, this new reality of the century, with profound implications for the shape of our institutions of governance, national and international, by the year 2012, these changes must be fully integrated into our economic and political life." So he's talking about this complete reforming of the system, this complete collectivist world government system under the banner, under the catch-all of egalitarian environmentalism, being implemented by 2012. They come up with the dates, not me.
No, he may be at the center of all of this. I typically attribute the center spot to Prince Charles, the sustainable prince, as he's been dubbed. But David Rockefeller, as head and founder of the Trilateral Commission, is certainly in the midst of this. He has acknowledged that he calls for world government, and he's proud of it. He calls for the disintegration of the United States of America. And, you know, he's the he and Zbigniew Brzezinski formed the Trilateral Commission, which now serves every presidential administration at the highest levels of government.
David Rockefeller is also chairman of the Club of Rome and 40-something other groups. He is an absolute monster, and we'll cover him right after this break. Join us on the other side of the Vinnie Espert Show.
The way it's going to be.
Start shining bright. But a bunch of folks who call themselves the Illuminati think they're the brightest things out. So far, maybe they are. We've been talking everything from the UN to the crowning prince himself, David Rockefeller, joined here for the last 2 hours by Michael Shaw from freedomadvocates.org. And thanks, Michael, for bearing with us and coming on for the whole 2 hours. It's been great. We've worked for quite a bit, I hope.
I'd like to raise one issue that that people can grab onto and take some action. Once you've understood Agenda 21, that takes a little study, maybe more than this radio show for sure. But to give people a target, something they can do locally that will have an effect in preserving our liberties and pushing this globalist onslaught offshore, is to understand the organization ICLEI. ICLEI is the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. It is a UN-accredited NGO, and what ICLEI does is it comes into cities around the world. ICLEI has bases on every continent. On this continent, it is out of Toronto, Canada, with a subsidiary office in Oakland, California. And what ICLEI does is it makes contracts with your city. In the United States, ICLEI has contracts with 600 cities, taxpayer funded. And what ICLEI does is that it then comes into your county planning department or community development department with its standard tool chest on how to implement sustainable policies in your community. And this means, attacking private property, educating for global citizenship, and monitoring all human action. And so ICLEI, as an international NGO, when it is contracted with your local city, you have your city mayor then violating Article 1, Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution, which prohibits states and their subdivisions from engaging or contracting or aligning with foreign political entities. Now, there's never been a case law in all of U.S. history under Article 1, Section 10. I think that's about ready to change because this ICLEI organization has to be driven out of your city. It has to be driven out of America. And the only way that happens is for you to understand what Agenda 21 is and what ICLEI does, and then find the ICLEI city closest to you. It may be your own city. And bring the action necessary to kick ICLEI out. Now, we're following the Kick ICLEI Out campaign at freedomadvocates.org. You know, we're getting some traction, and we welcome all the listeners to this show who want to kick ICLEI out of their town to coordinate with us, and we'll give you information on those activities being undertaken to begin to expose ICLEI, so that ICLEI can be kicked out of your community. And, you know, I think this is the, you know, it's a global to local action plan that is Agenda 21. The only way we can fight it, because we can't kick the UN out tomorrow, you know, but we can fight the UN's program when it comes into your town, and it's you and your neighbors that need to stand up and simply say, no ICLEI policy in our town. We are not adopting Agenda 21 procedures. Now, there are a lot of other organizations that are bringing ICLEI into your town, but none have contracts with your mayor for purposes of doing this. Bloomberg is a mayor who has signed an ICLEI contract on behalf of New York City. And there are cities in every state. There are 178 cities in California alone that have signed contracts with this ICLEI organization. If you want to know more about this, check out the ICLEI primer at freedomadvocates.org, and we've got lots of links. You'll learn.
Do you have an email address there, Michael?
Pardon?
Do you have an email address at all for people to contact you there? Or
yes, you can reach me at Shaw@freedomadvocates.org. Or you can go to, you know, we've got a contact address at the website, info@freedomadvocates.org.
I'd like to thank you once again, Michael, for coming on. It's been really great, and look forward to having you on again in future, if you will, and keep us posted on your press. You know, you really are pushing hard, and yeah, great patriot. People just have to remember we're up against some real monsters here. You know, if you think capitalism's bad and you side with the UN, we'll realize that David Rockefeller's bank, Chase Manhattan Bank, you know, three of the four, three or four presidents of the World Bank have come from Chase and the Rockefeller Institute. How about that?
Well,
it's all one in the same vein. These people are murderers who think you're cattle and you're scum, and they're going to come into your house, into your family, harass your family and run your life one way or another. They're just trying to do it by stealth rather than by force currently. We can't let it get to that point, and good patriots around the world must stand up and protect their own sovereignty. On another note, I'd like to say our thoughts are still with Vinny during this difficult time of his, and he'll be back with us next week to provide the balance on this show once again. I'd like to thank AmericanFreedomRadio.com for entertaining my outrageous opinions. And we hope you'll join us next week here on the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. I'm William Ryan signing out. See you guys next week.